Ahoy! You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Yestis and Ian LaCreme. Today, we are joined by Cato Feilan III, co-founder, CEO, and managing partner at La Hoja Capital Partners. He's going to be talking about what digital asset and TradFi hybrid products there are, what purpose they serve in the investment marketplace, and what the complexities of offering these products consist of. Enjoy! What's up, everyone? Welcome back. Hope you had some fun in those rooms. I know they can get pretty lively, you know, first thing in the morning for most of you. Had a lot of energy going around here. For everybody who has not been here before, I'll do a quick little intro as to what's going on. This is Diffuse Tap. Here's what's on tap at Diffuse Tap. This is a weekly event. We do it every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, 204 times in a row. We're going to briefly talk about Diffuse Tap, why are we doing this thing, Diffuse Funds, the company putting it on. And then we're going to hear from Mr. Cato Feilan III about what he's up to over La Hoja. And they're going to do two more rounds of tap rooms, kind of similar to what you just experienced, because this is networking. That's kind of the main name of the game here. The audience is largely alternative investors of one flavor or another. Yeah, I'd say probably 75% of our speakers are talking about crypto something or another, which is why we have the insights portion. We want the speaker to share some of their wisdom with the audience so you get a little bit more connected and you learn something along the way. Diffuse Funds is the company putting it on. That what we do is we spin up funds, or really just kind of sit at the intersection of crypto and heavily regulated stuff. The biggest one we have right now is our Diffuse Digital 30 product, which is trying to invest like the S&P 500, but for crypto assets. Top 30, it's publicly listed, investable, all of that stuff. So if you want to learn a little bit more about that, what we're doing with it, do not be shy to reach out. But enough about us, Cato. Can you please, well, first off, thank you for joining us. And you want to tell the good folks a little bit about your background and what you're up to over at La Hoja?
Sure. Thanks, Kenny. Thanks, everyone, for joining me today. I'm also joined by my co-founder, Meredith Yarbrough. She's on the call as well. We make up La Hoja Capital Partners. I've spent almost 30 years in financial services, and all of that inside and around Latin America and dealing with Latin American investors investing in U.S. and global products. And so La Hoja Capital Partners, we curate a portfolio of partnerships and fund managers and alternative investments and bring that portfolio to our Latin American investor base. And we also create innovative financial solutions that allow our Latin American investors to invest in U.S. and global product in a streamlined and tax-efficient way. So our portfolio, we believe, really represents the cutting edge of what's going on in traditional finance and digital assets. And we sit at that kind of intersection. And so I'd love to kind of talk about some of the things that we see, you know, within and without our portfolio, to just share about kind of what's going on in the world. I come from an ETF background. I was one of the early folks at iShares many, many years ago. And dealing with the Latin American investor base, it is something that is that's worked out very well. And we wanted to use that structure to really bridge the gap between private funds and public securities and allow non-US investors to get in. And as we see, in the spot Bitcoin ETF, if you give people something that they're familiar with, a structure and a process that makes it very streamlined for them to invest in esoteric and unique assets, well, they gravitate towards it. And those ETFs have become, the most, the fastest growing ETFs in history. And so, we wanted to use that same ethos and that same structure to blend public and private and allow our non-US investors to invest in these kinds of spaces and distribute these private funds at scale. So when we've done that, that process allowed us to really get more deeply into kind of the digital space with tokenization and other types of securitization. We've had lots of inquiries onto tokenizing our own note and what we've done there. And we're well engaged with a number of players around the world and blazing that path to really do that kind of securitization and tokenization. And so I'm interested to see what's going on with BlackRock and what their securitization of their funds going to look like as well. And then part of our portfolio as well is really searching for that blend of traditional finance and digital assets and using, the best of both worlds to create a better portfolio. So one of the firms that's out there that's doing something really innovative is Battery Finance out of Philadelphia. They've built a private credit fund that is a traditional private credit fund, but also has the collateral of the real assets of the underlying investment, plus, you know, a sleeve of Bitcoin, 10, 15% of Bitcoin inside that portfolio as collateral. And so what that allows is allows the private credit side to be much more conservative. If we look at what's going on in private credit around the world, interest rates so high, you know, private credit managers are using more leverage. They're going more in less lower quality assets to boost yield. With this portfolio, the manager can maintain a very conservative profile, not do any kind of distressed lending, and allow the Bitcoin side to really increase the returns in a non-correlated way to the underlying portfolio. You know, so that was one of the portfolios that we were really interested in. We created an exchange trading note for that that's Irish domiciled and trades on the Swiss and Vienna exchanges. And so that's been kind of the impetus of us getting further into that space. And what we find is, as well in Latin America, I'm based in Mexico City right now. And, you know, it is a very different feel here for anything crypto, digital, Web3, blockchain in Latin America than it feels like in the U.S. You know, they're solving real problems here for people. And there's so much mass, you know, so many people, you know, 21 million plus in Mexico City, another 25 million, 27 million in Sao Paulo and things like that. And so if you get something that works, you know, for a penny and you do it at scale, it really seems to grow. And so we're seeing lots of firms like Fuse Capital out of Brazil. They were the first to tokenize their own private fund. They also did the token for the Brazilian Reais. They did the coin for that years ago. And so they've been on the forefront of really delivering, you know, how we get they get their Brazilian investors into these types of products in a way that's streamlined and efficient for them, that doesn't entail them either having a bank account or creating their own wallet. It's just really a streamlined way for them to move money. And so what we're seeing down here is that kind of innovation that is continually pushing the envelope, that's really blending and leapfrogging some of the technologies that were here before. So in Latin America, you know, well before there was landline utilization that was widespread, cell phones took over, and then cell phones had a 90% plus coverage rate inside that. And that is happening now with kind of remittance payments as well, too. We had that talk, I guess, last week or 2 weeks ago about one of the firms here doing some remittance payments for those. So that is happening. It's real in Latin America. There is more money coming into Mexico and out of Mexico into the rest of Latin America than there is from the U.S. into Mexico, which has always been very, very high and a very large amount. But the challenge for a lot of these folks is that there is no conversion rate that you can go to get from a quetzal to a Mexican peso. You have to go to US dollar and then come back to peso. And so that is inefficient. It's centralized. There's lots of commissions in there. And so there are folks that are building up different blockchains like Ultron and facilitating payments like that. Folks that are using the Lightning Network like IBEX out of El Salvador. That are using the Lightning system to basically, Lightning platform to really move capital in a very efficient way. And so these are just some of the areas that some of those folks in Latin America are doing. And there's a real appetite for it. There's a real appetite for that kind of growth and that kind of experience. And it's just a different feel. I've been to a number of kind of Web3 and blockchain conferences here. And the predominant, you know, there's a lack of banking access in Latin America. And that's why there's been such a surge in fintechs in this space. And so types of products come out, people gravitate toward them, towards the apps and the structures that allow them to basically blend their world into the real world, whether they're a business owner and, you know, sending payments to from Mexico to Guatemala, or if they're a Colombian investor that wants to invest in U.S. real estate and using, you know, USDT and USDC to do that. And so there's just lots of different ways that people are blending these kind of traditional finance ways with crypto to facilitate their lives. It's not this kind of in the U.S. where we have this, kind of unicorn type looking view as to what we're trying to do in this space. It's really real world here in Latin America. And that blend of traditional finance and digital assets is very comfortable for a lot of these investors. They're not worried about
the volatility. Let's jump in a little bit here. So thank you for the kind of intro, a little bit about what you're up to. I'm trying to get to the Q&A portion of it. That was a lot of information there. Fun fact, the IBEX guys have been Diffuse Tap speakers in the past. So if anybody's interested more about their story, which was a lot of the right place, right time sort of thing. You can hear it on our little Spotify channel. So let's kind of, drill in and obviously with your background at iShares, you probably have a more informed view on the recent iBIT, commonly referred to as the BlackRock ETF. How does that specifically get viewed by international investors? Is that net good thing, bad thing? Is it just yet another in the sea of ETFs? Like you mentioned, the Brazilian ETF for Bitcoin spot. There are, you know, a lot of Swiss ETFs that kind of accomplish the same thing. Or do people really see this as a massive game changer?
I think people see it as a massive game changer, but I also have a different view kind of on those kind of specific types of ETFs. You know, because it puts the pressure on the investor and the fund and the RIA or the broker or the private banker to really help them manage that. And right now, a lot of those trades are still coming in unsolicited. So it's the investor that's driving that. And they want it, and they want to buy it a lot, and it makes it very easy for them to do so. But what it does, it creates some friction between what the asset allocation of the portfolio, the overall portfolio for that person is, and what they desire as far as getting more access to Bitcoin in their portfolio. And so there's still that kind of friction. There's not a cohesive an integrated investment strategy of how to integrate this. It's really just being driven by the individual investors that are calling up their advisors or brokers or bankers and say, hey, I want $1 million of the, IBIT. And so that's really what I've seen now. And it could be, there's
some. You say that it's more like at the portfolio construction where there's no advisors going out there and advising to their client, like you should have 1-3% of your assets in this sort of thing.
It's just starting. Yeah, that's still just starting. And with the larger firms, because it's still unsolicited, it's not on the platforms, the investor has to make that call. And so the advisors and portfolio managers aren't calling their clients, hey, we're going to add this sleeve of Bitcoin in this way because it's going to help us do this or do that in the portfolio. It's still driven by investor demand and access. And so it's wonderful that they have it, but it's also not integrated into the overall portfolio and trying to understand what the intention of the portfolio is when you add that in.
Okay, that makes sense. So, I mean,
one other thing too. Yeah. Just one more thing about international investors. The structure of Bitcoin ETFs, all of them, are different than regular exchange traded funds. So the taxation is going to be different for investors when they sell those things. So they're going to have to do a real good look through an understanding of the overall structure. So they're not adverse tax consequences for them. I'm not giving tax advice. I just know that from seeing the structure of the ETF, it will have some adverse tax consequences for different people in different places if they don't really look into that.
Interesting. I mean, can you expand on that? Obviously, we don't want to give tax advice, but this isn't as simple as they just pay cap gains. It's more complex.
No, it's different than the cap gains because, I mean, they will have cap gains at the security level, but the underlying structure will create some different things, just like Master Limited Partnerships did and ETFs that had MLPs in there. There's just different types of structures that create different tax structures and tax implications for people.
Okay, that makes sense. So buyer beware, I guess. And I'm guessing that's part of what you tell your international clients navigate. Yep. Larry Fink's going on CNBC. He's talking about how awesome Bitcoin is. Obviously, he's got a very vested interest in that conversation. And I got to imagine they're putting a lot of money into changing those advisors and wealth managers that you referenced earlier, changing their mind and making crypto just a natural place to advise clients to put some of their capital. Are you starting to see that Titanic turn? That was a terrible analogy, but you know what I'm saying? Are you starting to see people change how they're viewing crypto and advisors and wealth managers and institutions?
So in the US, I've seen it that there's some large RIAs that have made some big allocations and an understanding and education for their own investors about Bitcoin. And then here in Latin America, it's really those that were already kind of Bitcoin savvy or Bitcoin adjacent and friends of Bitcoin that are adding those to their portfolios. But I don't see it yet as a widespread. It's still being driven by the individual investors that wanted to get access. And now this gives them easy access to have it.
Okay. I suppose that makes sense. So all right, you're in a position. We'll change it a little bit from kind of the actual products for a sec. Where is the US in the crypto landscape from a regulatory, from an innovation? I mean, we touch on this a lot, but where do you think we are? Are we you know, so far behind, it's we can't make it back up, or are we, you know, you think there's a way forward here?
You know, I think always there's a way forward in the U.S. where it's a very, there's the rugged individualist and entrepreneurial spirit to kind of push those through, but without the kind of regulatory, imprimatur to be able to continue to do that, Latin America and outside the U.S. are just moving faster. You know, there's just more innovation. It's quicker. It's faster to doing newer things. And they're blending that digital asset and traditional finance world. You know, there are firms in Brazil that are providing loans to U.S. farms based on staking assets in crypto. And so there's just some different things that people are doing in different ways in Latin America that you just can't do in the U.S. And I feel like also that in the U.S., we're trying to find a problem to solve. And in Latin America, there's so many problems to solve that people are just going at it and getting it.
So expand on that. So in the U.S., is this the argument, like the financial services system in the U.S. is just so damn efficient that it's Bitcoin and crypto doesn't necessarily add that much value, whereas you get further afield, you go to Latin America, like you got currency issues, you got all those other problems that actually is really solving an immediate issue.
Well, I think what BlackRock is doing is really showing that from a portfolio management level, from an investment management level, from a portfolio construction, all those things, portfolio risk and management of those things, that there are ways to incorporate digital and crypto into that to deliver a better investment experience for an investor through the spot Bitcoin ETFs, to create better access through, say, tokenization and the like. They've also done some of those partnerships with JP Morgan and the like with some of the swaps that they do as well. And so from that, that's an infrastructure type level where that will be more pervasive. There is on that US side that, you know, BlackRock and others are driving that to where they're blending those systems and the values and the structures that and combining them in a way that makes a stronger and better product or solution or experience for the investors that they have. Where in Latin America, it's really kind of ground up. You know, it's ground up for like, hey, I need to send, you know, Quetzales to the U.S. or to Mexico or to Brazil. How do I do that? How do I do it efficiently? And so it doesn't take me 10 days and I pay a 6% commission on it. You know, so there's lots of little things like that. So it's a different level. You know, the U.S. is coming in from a 30,000 foot level and kind of bringing it down. And Latin America, it's ground up solving the problems that the individuals have here.
Okay, so this sounds a little bit like tech debt, right? Like you've got this massive behemoth and here's the thing that might make it better. So let's just try to gradually integrate them versus in Latam, it's more like, nah, fuck it, we're just going to start from scratch and we're just going to be the most efficient day one.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like you said, I mean, most, they're still not, you know, bank access, like full banking access is still very low. The ratio, the percentage is still very low throughout Latin America. So these types of products that come through apps that allow people to do remittances and payments and other types of things through crypto and digital, they're growing rapidly. They're growing absolutely exponentially, and they're moving super fast and different than, say, that's happening in the U.S.
Understood. That makes sense. On that note, actually, you mentioned Lightning with the IBEX guys in El Salvador. Jake wants to know a little bit more about that. Is it like, what are the fees like? Do you have a feel for that? Like people doing these point of sale transactions on the Lightning network using one of these things in El Salvador? How does that compare to just, you know, regular interchange fees that you get here in the U.S.?
Yeah, interchange fees are generally about 3 to 6% that's getting charged on these guys. And then on the Lightning network they're doing, I think the last time I talked to these guys yesterday, and it's about 10 to 15 basis points. You know, so it's a much different proposition, and it's almost instantaneous. I think about 10 minutes to get one from one place to the other. And again, it solves that problem of getting the exchange from a currency that doesn't normally have a pairing that the bigger clearinghouses would do. And so whether you're doing a Sucre or a Quetzal or anything like that to one other country in Latin America, that's two exchanges you'd have to do normally in the traditional finance world. And in crypto, it's instantaneous and it, you know, passes through and it doesn't have those commissions in it. Okay. And so that's growing. So that continues to expand, and they're trying to find different ways and different folks to use it, whether it's a Guatemalan builder paying their construction workers in Mexico or things like that. It's just different ways to use those products and make them seamless and efficient for people that don't have banks, people that don't have a place to send a wire transfer.
Makes sense. And I mean, even the speakers last week, right? The zero fee remittance platform, like it totally makes sense. And there's it's not a new business model, but it's a hell of a lot more efficient business model. So it's almost the same thing. All right.
Absolutely.
We're out of time, Kato. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for your thoughts. They're great. We are going to do tap room. So we're going a couple of housekeeping items for everybody. Networking, not pitching, be kind. Participant list, you ain't going to get one. So swap details right there in the chat or join a Telegram group and you can talk to people to your heart's content and keep up to date with what we're doing at Diffuse. Tap rooms generally go like this. You talk about yourself for 30 seconds. Everybody knows who you are. There's a lot of familiar faces, so you might end up in a room where you all know each other, in which case you can jump right to discussing the topic for 10 or so minutes. And Ayla is going to tell us what that topic is now.
Yeah, and the topic is what kind of off the beaten path type of innovation are you seeing outside the U.S. that has not made it here yet but might have potential to get onshore? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here in just about 10 minutes.
Great, Grant. Welcome back. Kato, entertain us. Tell us the future. What's coming down the pipe? What are you excited for?
You know, I think that I really believe in emerging markets really driving, you know, the adaptation and the innovation that's happening in the crypto and digital space and the blending of the traditional finance and digital assets. You know, it is, there are great minds here that, you know, educated all over the world that are, you know, really bringing their expertise to bear to build these types of solutions and bring them out to the world. And so that's the thing that I'm most excited about in the future is what's happening internally, not out, you know, outside the U.S., as to how it's driving the utilization and implementation of these types of systems and products and solutions. And so I'm here in Mexico and I'm seeing it day to day. And every, you know, I've got three different apps now that have different types of access to different types of crypto and to facilitate different things for myself. There's one of the things that was interesting that I saw too is that there is there's some network marketing, like multi-level marketing going on in Latin America too with some of the crypto stuff. So that's kind of interesting. You know, and so it feels like Amway for crypto, but you know, it we'll see how that plays out. But you know, because people don't have access to banks, this is a way for people to get access to capital.
Multi-level marketing crypto, also known as a Ponzi scheme from time to time. And it's funny because who you talk to, all of crypto is a Ponzi scheme. So, interesting.
Very, yeah, it is so much.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Ayla, did we fill enough air for you to furiously shuffle?
Yeah. And now that we got onto Ponzi scheme, I might change my topic. Why don't we do as a topic, what are some creative marketing ideas that you've seen executed when it comes to growing crypto products or crypto communities, et cetera, or some clever hacks you've seen recently? It's no longer college students, I think. I mean, we might have moved on from that. So I'll pop you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here shortly.
Cool. Awesome. Welcome. Hope you all good chats. Ours consisted about hats for a fair amount, so surprisingly interesting. Here are some wrap-up things. Actually, no, Kato, you first for the wrap-up. Please. Plug your pluggables. Where do you want people to go now that they've seen your shiny head?
Find us on LinkedIn, myself and Meredith Yarbrough. You know, we're at the nexus of TradFi, digital assets, and alternatives. You know, we help U.S. managers link up with non-U.S. investors, and we help Latin American investors streamline their access to private funds all over the world. And so, you know, we're excited about kind of the innovations in digital assets that allow capital flow more freely and easily between and around all these countries and around the world. And we're excited to be part of that to help facilitate those things in those areas.
Super awesome. Thank you very much for sharing some of your thoughts here today. Always appreciated. Up next, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Central every week. Next week, we're going to be talking about how to spot crypto investment trends. So come along and learn a little bit as we go. Telegram group, join it. Link it just saw come through in the chat again. So go click that little button, say hello, stay abreast of what's going on. But Kato and Meredith, thank you again for, well, making this happen. Well, I guess really Ayla as well, in a massive way. And everybody else, thanks for showing up. Doesn't work without you. So have yourself a great week.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of four or five. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.